Now, thirdly, we come on to the axial age. The axial age. And this is the 600-year period centering roughly on the year 500 BC. And it's during this period, the axial age, that there begins the whole course of the higher evolution of man. This is the period of the emergence of self-consciousness, the emergence of awareness, the emergence of individuality in the true sense of the term, of the emergence of the new man. And it's with this axial age that we're principally concerned this evening, even though I'm afraid we have been rather a long time in getting to it. It is important, however, that we should see the axial age in its full historical and evolutionary context. Now, before dealing with the axial age at some length, we must enumerate the fourth and the last of our great segments of human history. And this is, of course, the age of science and technology, sometimes also known as the age of anxiety. It's the age, I need hardly remind you, in which we're at present living. This age began perhaps 500 years ago, and I need not, I think, say anything more about it than this. So let us get back to the axial age. This term, the axial age, was coined by that very great modern existentialist philosopher, Karl Jaspers. In a sense, though, he borrows the term from Hegel. Hegel speaks, in his philosophy of history, speaks of an axis of history, by which he means a point in history towards which or from which everything in history moves. And for him, for Hegel, this axis is the appearance in history, on the stage of history, of Christ. But Jaspers objects to this. Jaspers takes a much wider view. He says that such an interpretation of history, that is to say, making the appearance of Christ the axis of history, can have meaning only for the believing Christian. And he says that if there is an axis in history, we must find it empirically in profane history as a set of circumstances significant for all men, including Christians. And he says this must carry conviction for all men, whether Westerners or Asians, without the support of any particular content of faith. And in this way, if the axis of history is ascertained in this way, it will provide all men with a common historical frame of reference. Now, the spiritual process which took place between 800 and 200 BC seems to Jaspers to constitute such an axis of history. Like other students of history, like other students of comparative religion and comparative culture, Jaspers is very much struck by the intense spiritual ferment and upheaval which characterizes this period, 800 to 200 BC. A ferment, an upheaval, which seems to have been absolutely decisive, crucial for humanity. And this period, therefore, this period 800 to 200 BC, Jaspers designates the axial age, because it's as though all over the world, certainly in all civilized areas, man, during this period, seems to have awakened as though from the sleep of ages. In half a dozen countries of the world, men were born whose achievements influenced, either directly or indirectly, almost the whole of the human race in one way or another since. Men at whom we still look up after all these hundreds, even thousands of years, in admiration. Men, in fact, so well known that one need do hardly more than just mention their names, like a sort of chant, like a sort of incantation, if you like. In China, during this period, we have the name, we have the very great figure of Confucius, born about 550 BC. Confucius, I think we may say, is probably the greatest single influence in history on the most populous country in the world. Also during this period in China, there was Lao Tzu, who according to tradition, though not according to modern scholarship, was an elder contemporary of Confucius. And in addition to these two great, these two resplendent figures of Confucius and Lao Tzu, there was Mo Tzu, there was Chuang Tzu, and a host of lesser names, lesser only in comparison with the towering figures of Confucius and Lao Tzu. And then if we turn to India, what do we see there? During that period, first of all, we see the great galaxy of the Upanishadic sages, some of them, unfortunately for us, anonymous. Great sages like Yajnavalkya, who enunciated the great spiritual truths which are found in the Upanishads of Hinduism, especially the earlier Upanishads. And then moving on a little, we find the even greater, the even more brilliantly shining figure of Gautama the Buddha. And we find also Mahavira, the founder of Jainism. The Buddha, of course, is the founder of the great world's teaching that still bears his name, a teaching which has probably been a greater force for good in the world than any other. If we come nearer home, as it were, if we come to Persia, during this same period, we find the eminent figure of Zoroaster, or Zarathustra, the founder of what nowadays we know as Zoroastrianism, or sometimes as Parsiism. This subsequently became the religion of the great Persian Empire, which at the height of its power and influence rivaled the empires of Rome and of China. Zoroastrianism also, we know, very importantly influenced all three Semitic monotheisms, influenced Judaism at the time of the exilic period especially, influenced through Judaism Christianity, and also subsequently Islam. Then if we turn to look at a much smaller area, if we turn and look at Palestine, we find there the great figures of the Jewish prophets, the great figures of Amos, of Isaiah, of Jeremiah, of the second Isaiah, and a number of others. And these men, these prophets, enunciated sublime moral ideas, which reappeared later on in the teachings of Christ. Then in Greece, what do we find during this same period? In Greece, we find an absolutely extraordinary outburst of spiritual and artistic genius. In the world of philosophy, we find the great figures of Socrates, of Plato. I think Whitehead remarked that the whole of Western philosophy is just a series of footnotes to Plato. And Plato lived during this period, and also did Aristotle. And we find, in addition to these three greatest names, we find a whole host of what are called the pre-Socratic philosophers, who are of lesser importance only in comparison with Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. And then in Greece, in the field of poetry, what do we find? We find Homer. We find Pindar. And in the drama, the poetic drama, tragedy, we find Aeschylus, we find Sophocles, we find Euripides. And in sculpture, we find people like Phidias, like Praxiteles, as well as historians and scientists, almost innumerable. So, therefore, ancient Greece, we may say, represents one of the most highly concentrated outbursts of creativity philosophical and artistic creativity, especially in the whole history of the human race, the whole history of mankind. Now, the names I've just mentioned, few though they are, shining though they are, summarize perhaps three quarters between them of all the higher culture of humanity. And they all appeared, all these great, all these glorious names, these figures, these geniuses, appeared during that crucial 600-year period. And this period, therefore, most correctly, we term the Axial Age. Now, the men whose names I've mentioned appeared in widely separated parts of the world, in China, in India, Palestine, Persia, Greece, elsewhere too. But they all have something in common. They all have one great trait, one great characteristic in common. And that is that they are all individuals. They all stand out from the mass. They're taller, as it were, than other men. They are all new men. They've all started, to a greater or to a lesser degree, on the process, on the course of the higher evolution of man. So that the Axial Age is, therefore, the age of the emergence of the new man. And we're going to close this evening by studying some of the characteristics of that new man.